Good afternoon from the Bing Crosby Theater in downtown Spokane, and welcome to the first official debate between the leading candidates to be Washington's next governor. I'm Austin Jenkins of Public Radio's Northwest News Network and host of Inside Olympia on TVW Washington's C-SPAN channel. The Northwest News Network is a collaboration of public radio stations in Washington, Oregon, and Idaho. This debate is being broadcast live statewide on Spokane Public Radio, Northwest Public Radio, KUOW in Seattle, KPLU Seattle-Tacoma, and Oregon Public Broadcasting. It's also being carried live on TVW. A special thanks to Krem Television here in Spokane for providing the uplink for this statewide broadcast. Please join me now in welcoming the candidates onto the stage. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Before we begin the debate, brief introductions of each candidate. Democrat Jay Inslee is a former United States congressman who has the distinction of having been elected on both sides of the Cascade Mountains. Mr. Inslee is also co-author of the book Apollo's Fire, Igniting America's Clean Energy Economy. He is an attorney by training, and Jay Inslee and his wife Trudy have three grown sons and live on Bainbridge Island. Republican Rob McKenna is serving his second term as Washington's Attorney General. He has the distinction of having argued and won before the U.S. Supreme Court three times. Mr. McKenna is currently president of the National Association of Attorneys General. Rob McKenna is also an attorney by training, and he and his wife, Marilyn, have four children and live in Bellevue. The general theme of this afternoon's debate is jobs, the economy, and economic development. However, I do reserve the right to ask off-topic questions. I have incorporated a couple of questions that were submitted in advance to the AWB from members. You will clearly know when I ask those questions. Otherwise, I am solely responsible for the questions asked in this debate. Now, here is the debate format. Each candidate will have 1 minute to make an opening statement. After that, I will alternate asking the candidates questions. The candidate receiving the question will have 90 seconds to respond. His opponent will have 45 seconds for rebuttal, followed by a 15-second response to the rebuttal. I also reserve the right to ask follow-up questions to one or both candidates. They will have 15 seconds to respond to a follow-up question. During the second half of the debate, each candidate will have 30 seconds to pose a question to his opponent. The responses will follow the same format as the questions I pose. At the conclusion of the debate, each candidate will have 90 seconds to make a closing statement. A reminder to the audience, there will be no applause other than expressions of support or opposition to the candidates for the remainder of the debate. At the end, you are welcome to join me in thanking them. Now, earlier, we conducted a coin toss to determine who would give the first opening statement. What we did not do is make sure that there was a bottle of water at each podium. So,
thank you.
I'm going to hand that to you. Hide that. And by coin toss, it was determined that Mr. McKenna will have 1 minute to make the first opening statement. Mr. McKenna, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Austin. Thanks to AWB and GSI for hosting this today. All of you have heard me say we need a new direction for Washington. We need a new direction so that a parent who needs a job has one to provide for a family, so that a single mom worried about her children's education can send them to a great public school, so that an older couple looking for assisted living services can obtain the care they deserve, so that communities working together to free their streets from drugs, crime, and violence can feel safe and secure, so that a family trying to make ends meet can provide their children with a promising future through a higher education system which is affordable and accessible. Unfortunately, these dreams are at risk. Unemployment is too high. Our schools leave too many children behind. Our colleges are too expensive. And yet the same people and interest groups have been running state government for the past 28 years. They're out of ideas and energy. They just keep insisting we need higher taxes and more regulations. It's why we need a new direction for Washington. It's why I'm running for governor.
Mr. Inslee, 1 minute for an opening statement.
Thanks to AWB and GSA. I am delighted to be here in Spokane to be able to talk about my vision on how to build a working Washington. We started our jobs plan right here at Absolute Aviation here in Spokane. You know, I have lived on both sides and worked on both sides of the Cascades. I have a deep understanding of our state and an abiding faith in our ability to move forward. We Washingtonians are an innovative people. We create, we invent, we build. We've led technological revolutions in aerospace and e-commerce. Now we're in the cusp of technological revolutions in clean energy and biotech, and I believe it is our destiny to again lead the world. But to do that, we need a better relationship, a better partnership between government and business. I can make that work. When farmers wanted the apples in Japan, I got it done. When Microsoft needed more spectrum so that they could grow, we got it done. We can build a working Washington. I intend to do that as the next governor of the state of Washington. Thank you.
Thank you, gentlemen. Now to questions. The first question goes to Mr. McKenna. The U.S. Supreme Court is expected to rule this month on the constitutionality of the Affordable Health Care Act. You have joined that lawsuit against the law. If the court overturns the entire law or just the individual mandate, what steps would you take as governor to address the issue of more than a million Washingtonians who are uninsured?
I fully expect, as governor of Washington, to be moving forward to implement the health insurance exchange, which the legislature has already approved in state law. The health insurance exchange will provide insurance to individuals and to small businesses with subsidies for people who cannot afford the premium by themselves. I expect to be implementing the expanded Medicaid program, which is projected to bring up to 500,000 more Washingtonians onto Medicaid. But there's more we need to do than that. We also need to look to insurance reform to create more competition, more opportunities for people to buy insurance that they can afford. We need a market which is national, not just limited to our state. We need to go to a place where one day you'll see the gecko selling health insurance on TV. That means we will have arrived at a national market. We also need liability reform. We need to reduce the cost of defensive medicine, which are adding billions of dollars to cost in medical care that then translate to additional costs for health insurance. We also need to bend the health care cost curves in our state by encouraging more Washingtonians, starting with Washington State employees, to move to consumer-directed health care plans where they have ownership. They've got a medical savings account. They pay lower premiums. They fund their deductibles out of the medical savings account. So these are all changes we're going to make moving forward. Washington has been at the forefront of health care reform for many, many years, already doing many things called for in the Affordable Care Act. I expect we'll continue to be leaders.
Mr. Inslee, your 45-second rebuttal.
Well, we needed action in health care reform because the gecko does not provide health insurance for everyone. And I am a person who believes fundamentally it is a value in the state of Washington that if you are a breast cancer survivor, you ought to be able to get health coverage in our state. This is a value that we should embrace. If you are an employer, you should be able to get a subsidy to help you provide insurance for your employees, something that I embrace. This is a value of the state of Washington. If you're a father or mother and you have a 25-year-old living in your basement looking for that first job, you should be able to have your son or daughter on your insurance. These are matters that I have supported and will continue to support. And I have to say that I am disappointed that our Attorney General has tried to take every single one of those rights away from Washingtonians.
Thank you. Your time is up. 15-second response.
Well, Congressman Inslee voted for a law with an individual health insurance mandate, which advisors to Congress warned was highly problematic constitutionally, and he put all of those other values at risk by including the unpopular health insurance mandate into the law to begin with.
I want to ask you both a 15-second follow-up. Again, more than a million, 1.1 million Washingtonians uninsured in the state. You mentioned the Medicaid funding that,
yep.
and the suggestion that it would still come, even if part of this law or all of this law is overturned. I want to ask you that question. What confidence do you have that Washington will still get a significant matching dollar to insure another several hundred thousand people in this state, even if the court overturns all or part of this law? Mr. McKenna, 15
well,
seconds.
Well, I think Congress is obviously committed to expanding the Medicaid program. I think it's one of those programs that could have passed if, by itself, instead of being wrapped up in a bill passed in the middle of the night on a straight party line vote, which a bill that people didn't even read. Medicaid was created by bipartisanship.
Help for those uninsured in the form of Medicaid funding?
No, and the sad fact is if the bill is overturned, we cannot look for assistance from Uncle Sam. We will have to make decisions on our own. Now, I believe we need to embrace preventative health care. We need to reduce the costs on businesses by embracing real health care rather than sick care. We'll need to move forward on our own. I'll be a governor who will want action rather than ignoring the obvious need for health care reform in our state and country.
onto the issue of education, which is clearly a linchpin for Washington's economy now and into the future. And this question goes to Mr. Inslee. The state Supreme Court said in its McCleary ruling earlier this year that the state is not adequately funding public schools. Both Democratic Governor Chris Gregoire and Senate Republican leader Mike Hewitt have said the state will have to find a new dedicated source of revenue for K-12. If elected governor, are you prepared to ask voters to support a new tax for schools? You have 90 seconds.
No, I am proposing a different avenue, which is job creation, to get those 280,000 people back to work so we can increase revenues to fund education, and embracing lean management techniques to bring efficiency to state government, and embrace preventative health care so that we can reduce the rate of medical inflation, and then close some of the corporate tax loopholes. These things together, I believe, can move us forward to fulfill the paramount duty of the state. Now, let me tell you why I think this is so critical to economic recovery. We are fifth in the United States in per capita in the number of high-tech jobs that we have. That's good. We can boast to be in a high-tech state. But we are 46th in the production of our students, who in fact have the skill sets and the degrees to fulfill those jobs. If we are going to have the vision that I think Washington State is worthy of, we have to have changes. But those changes don't wait and cannot wait just for additional funding. I have a reform package that starts with a no-excuses policy of having a great teacher in every classroom. I have a provision that will make sure we do not allow any substandard teacher to remain in the classroom. In my reform package, I emphasize STEM education, science, technology, so that every child, I believe, ought to have an expectation of success. You know, 1 out of 4 of our children are dropping out of school. 1 out of 4 of those first graders never make it to a high school graduation. I want what Renton is doing, increasing their dropout prevention by 20%, their graduation.
Thanks.
This is a vision for the state of Washington.
Thank you very much. 45-second rebuttal.
Well, we can't put more money into an unreformed system that isn't more innovative. We have to reform. We need innovation. We know what those are. It's my call for reform and innovation, as well as full funding, which is the cause of Stand for Children's endorsement of me as governor, a leading education reform group in this state. There are 5 places we can look for more money for things like funding all-day kindergarten and early learning for children who can't get in today. Those include squeezing the existing budget. Those include closing tax loopholes that aren't cost-effective or cost too much. That include using more of the new revenues, which we're going to see in the state budget over the next several biennia, for education. Repurposing existing spending. The recent performance audit found that a 1% shift in administrative central office costs could hire another 1,000 teachers, and then the common school levy swap will produce more revenue for property poor districts.
Thank you very much. Your 15-second response.
So I have embraced innovation. I actually, in my plan, have a proposal for innovative schools. But I simply do not agree this is a moment to take away millions of dollars out of the public school system, which is already hemorrhaging money, and withdraw that sums for public schools. Let's do innovation the way Renton is doing it and Pasco.
15-second follow-up. Back to this issue of a dedicated funding source. At this point, I don't think anybody's talking about the legislature and the governor doing that without the will of voters. Are you here and now, both of you, absolutely taking this possibility of a ballot measure for a new dedicated fund source for education, K-12, off the table? Is that your stance? Mr. Inslee, 15 seconds.
Well, yes. I am proposing that we build our economy, we get those 280,000 people back to work, we embrace an innovative economy, and we build our tax base that way. That way can embrace what we've always done, which is to finance our schools through growth. And I think that is realistically the only way we are going to get this job done.
So it sounds like a tax is off the table for you, off the table for you if you're elected.
Austin, we have a dedicated revenue source for K-12 education. It's called the State General Fund. That's what paramount duty means in the state constitution.
Here's another follow-up. The down payment on the McCleary decision is pegged at about $1 billion for the next biennium. Will you pledge here and now, if elected, that you will make that full payment in the next budget? Again, we'll start with you since it's your question.
Well, I'm sorry?
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm pledging to really fulfill the paramount duty, which does start with education reform in addition to finances. And I think this is an important point. We can't wait for the first $1 billion to embrace the reforms that I am putting forward. Then we are going to fulfill
that. Your time is up, and I did not hear an absolute commitment to that $1 billion payment. Do you make that commitment?
Yes, I do. $3 billion is about 3% of $32 billion. I think we can find that money in the state general fund budget, and we can do it in the next biennium.
Mr. McKenna, Washington is one of a handful of states that do not allow charter schools. Recently, several education groups announced that they will try to put a measure on the fall ballot to allow a limited number of charter schools for at-risk kids at failing schools. How will you vote on this measure if it makes it on the ballot, and why?
Well, I read the bill and the analysis behind it. I've also studied charter schools as a tool that 41 other states have used. I've looked at the research and the data and come to the conclusion that this is a tool we ought to have in our state, that we shouldn't be one of only 9 states in America that doesn't allow a single public charter school in our state. The other states that don't allow them are typically small rural states like South Dakota and Nebraska. All the other big states, all the states with major metropolitan areas like we have allowed charter schools into the mix. And I think they ought to be allowed into the mix in our state as well. They're not a panacea. They're not a silver bullet. That they should be part of the mix. We can also look to innovative models of schools we already have in our state. We can look to our STEM schools like Aviation High School, Arts and Sciences School, the Arts and Sciences High School in Marysville, the Delta STEM School in Tri-Cities. We can look to the successes of Asa Mercer Middle School on Beacon Hill and of Lincoln Center, which is a small high school at Lincoln High School in Tacoma, which I visited yesterday. There are models for innovation. But charter schools, public charter schools that are highly innovative, high-performing, can add to that mix. We can more rapidly expand the number of highly innovative, high-performing schools available to our children, especially children who are in low-income areas and can't move around to find the better schools, or their parents cannot afford to move them around. So I'll be voting yes, and I encourage other voters to do the same.
Mr. Inslee, you have 45 seconds.
There is great innovation going around our schools. Look, you go to the Taft Academy at Federal Way, you see the new types of science education. It'll blow you away. It's very, very exciting. My plan will embrace innovation and provide schools new grants to be able to create new systems of curriculum. But look, I'm going to try to put $1 billion into the next budget or more for education. But it is not going to be made easier if, in fact, we drain out another several, goodness knows how many million dollars, into charter schools. The research is interesting on this. I really appreciate people driving a force of innovation. But the research is clear that only 1 out of 5 succeed and 2 fail if we don't have public accountability. We need public accountability in our schools. I'll be voting no.
Thank you. 15 seconds, Mr. McKenna.
Well, I've been to the Taft Academy. It's a wonderful place in the Federal Way School District. It's called a partnership school. I agree. It's a good model. But don't be misled by the congressman's statement. These charter schools are not private schools. They're public schools. They operate under a different model, a charter, but they're public schools.
Moving to higher education, Mr. Inslee, Washington's 4-year universities and colleges have announced another round of double-digit tuition increases for next year. At the University of Washington, the Regents also issued a rare declaration of concern about declining state support for higher ed. What would you do as governor to immediately reverse the trend of skyrocketing college tuition in this state?
Well, first off, we've got to stop the reduction of state support of our colleges. I am glad that the Republican effort to cut $74 billion out of the education budget was defeated in the legislature this year. And I got to tell you why I feel so strongly about this. I drove a bulldozer to pay my way through college. I now know how difficult it is to see this incredible debt burden that we were putting on our kids. And we've got to reverse that. Now, one of the ways is to embrace the HELP program, which are low-interest loans from the state to these employees. To these students. But we've got to do some other things as well to make college more affordable and more accessible. In my higher education plan, and by the way, these plans are available at jainslee.com if people are interested in them, we have a proposal to help expand online learning opportunities for our students. We have a proposal to free universities from some of the restrictions and the regulations which increase their costs of doing business. And we have to do what I think is perhaps one of the most important things in my jobs plan. We need to allow colleges to commercialize some of their technology so that they can generate some dollars for themselves. You know, these research institutions create great value, but we are not capturing it for the universities because they can't spin off. We have restrictions from spinning off small businesses. If we do these things, we will do what is necessary. which is to use our colleges as the fundamental driving force of our innovative economy.
Thank you. 45 seconds, Mr. McKenna.
The high water mark for higher education funding in our state was established in the early 1990s when Republicans controlled the state Senate. Senator Dan McDonald was Ways and Means Chairman. At that point, over 16% of the state budget was devoted to higher education. In fact, when I was student body president at the University of Washington, about 16% was devoted to higher ed in the state budget. My daughter Madeline was student body president at the University of Washington last year. That had declined to 8%. So in answer to the question, how do you, you know, stop future massive tuition increases? The first thing you do is stop cutting higher education. Stop cutting higher education in the general fund budget, which is why I called Senate budget writers on the Republican side last spring or earlier this year and asked them to reverse their original decision to cut higher ed.
15 seconds, Mr. Inslee.
Well, I think when we do budget, we have to do it on a hard-nosed basis. In a hard-nosed basis, we don't judge how much you spend as the goal. You judge the outcome. We need to judge the number of engineers when we decide what our budget is. And yes, we need to build these budgets, but we don't have a printing press, and the faulty math that's been used doesn't work.
Thank you. Your time is up. Just to be clear, by way of a 15-second follow-up for both of you, you've talked about the need to fund a K-12 education. You've talked about additional Medicaid funding. That's a 50-50 match for the state. And now you're talking about absolutely ramping up spending for higher ed and returning to more state support. The economy is recovering, but it's not recovering that fast. Very briefly, 15 seconds, what assurance can you give the voters that you can reverse this trend for higher ed in a first term?
Well, we certainly don't want to dig the hole deeper, and like, unfortunately, the other party attempted to do. That's number one. But number two, we do have to realize we don't have a printing press. And I, you know, have to be somewhat disappointed that my opponent has made promises that we just can't keep, a $5 billion promise that we do not have.
Okay. Your time is up, Mr. McKenna. 15
seconds. Don't be fooled by the rhetoric. The folks running Olympia for the last 28 years, especially the last 10 to 20 years, have decimated higher education funding. They're the ones who are responsible for driving higher education from 16% of the state budget to 8% of the state budget and down to only 3% for our four-year universities.
For our radio audience and television audience, you're listening and watching a debate between the leading candidates for Washington governor, Republican Rob McKenna, and Democrat Jay Inslee, broadcast on public radio stations across the state of Washington and on TVW. Now I want to dig into your respective jobs proposals. And for a little context for the audience, as of last month, there were still nearly 300,000 Washingtonians out of work and looking for a job in the state of Washington. Both of these candidates are running on a jobs platform. So far, neither has been willing to tell me, at least, how many jobs they believe they can create if elected. So with that in mind, Mr. McKenna, the question goes to you. You are proposing to exempt an additional 118,000 small businesses from the B&O business and occupation tax by increasing their tax credit to $4,800 per year. The Office of Financial Management previously projected this would cost more than $500 million over a two-year budget cycle. How can the state afford a tax break of that size when there's a $1 billion education bill due next year and you believe the state is underfunding higher ed?
First of all, Austin, with all due respect, I haven't proposed that as something we're going to do in my first term as governor. What I've said is the people proposing the state income tax in Initiative 1098 proposed it as part of their proposal, and I cited their number simply because I don't have a budget staff. So I used their number to estimate how much it would cost the state in order to give those small businesses that kind of break. And I've said very clearly in many, many speeches, it's not something we can afford to do right away. But at the same time, leaving the current B&O tax credit at $841, which is now the threshold before you have to start paying B&O taxes, doesn't make sense either. Over time, as we can afford it, and after we have fully funded our schools and restored funding for higher education, it's something we should be shooting for. Because small businesses are hurt by the B&O tax. It's not the only change that we can make, however. We should also be looking for ways to make it easier to pay the B&O tax. I met with one small business owner in Longview who brought out his B&O tax returns for me, laid them out on the table. He said, these are all the jurisdictions where I have to file a return. He showed me one where the tax owing was $9. That is a lot less than what he spent to prepare the tax return. Centralizing the collection of the B&O tax, like we centralized the collection of sales tax remittances, like we centralized the collection of property taxes, would be a sensible step that would save overhead because you'd have fewer tax collectors and make it a lot easier for the taxpayers.
Mr. Inslee, you have 45 seconds.
These are tough times. And making promises you can't fulfill is not the mark of the leadership our state needs. If you will look at the review done by the Associated Press and other newspapers of my opponent's plans, they will tell you they are based on faulty math. They are promises that cannot be kept. We need to have realistic approaches to drive innovation and job creation. I have proposed a tax credit for research and development costs of small businesses to help them get capital when, in fact, they want to start their business. I have proposed a targeted tax credit that goes along with you hire. If you hire a small business and you hire someone, you get a credit. I have proposed having a one-stop payment system. These are things that are realistic to the position we are in as a state, and I'm sticking to this.
Okay. Thank you. Your 15-second response.
The Congressman opposes B&O tax relief at any time for small businesses. That's the message we're hearing here today. My view is if you don't set it as a goal, you'll never get there. If it's not part of your vision, you'll never attain it. Clearly, it's not part of the Congressman's vision. He's opposed to it.
You mentioned your new hires proposal. You also, in your jobs plan, call for providing B&O tax relief in the first 3 years of a company's life, but only to businesses in your targeted sectors like biotech, biomedicine, and clean energy. Why not offer that B&O tax relief to all small startup companies?
Well, if we had unlimited funds, I would do that. But we have to make priority decisions as leaders. China is not waiting to try to dominate in lithium-ion batteries. Germany is not waiting to dominate in solar cells. We should not be waiting to building the industries of the next century. And we are capable of doing that in this state. That's why I'm targeting my proposals.
Okay. Mr. McKenna.
Well, I'm looking out at an audience full of business people. They have all kinds of businesses. I wonder how many of them favor a plan that gives their competitors or an entirely different industry a competitive advantage over their own. Wouldn't you rather have a level playing field where all of you have a fair chance of being successful? That's what I'm aiming for. As a governor, it's what I've done as Attorney General.
I feel like we short-circuited the process here. So by my understanding, I asked you a question about your proposal, and we went through three responses. I then turned to you to ask you about your jobs proposal. This was a fresh question. You should have a minute and a half. I believe you were shortchanged on time. I think it's about a minute back on the clock for you because I think you answered that in 30 seconds, and then we'll make do on this end as well.
Absolutely.
So 1 minute to continue to talk a little bit about, again, I asked you about your targeted B&O tax break.
I wrote a book about 4 or 5 years ago about how we can create jobs through clean energy. And I'm so happy now to see the seeds of that innovation economy sprouting in the state of Washington. Right here in Spokane, the McKinstry Company, the Itron Company, Absolute Aviation, these are cutting-edge companies. In Moses Lake, a company that's the Western Hemisphere's largest manufacturer of silicon substrate. At Silicon Energy, makes the world's most durable solar cell. You know where it's made? It's Marysville, Washington. These are seeds that we need to see sprout across. And it's not just clean energy. It's advanced aerospace. That's why, as part of my plan, I'm proposing we have a center of aviation fuels excellence at Washington State University. You know who designed the fuel for the first airplane ever to fly across the Atlantic Ocean? Were people in the state of Washington. This is what we are capable of. But to make sure that these businesses can compete with the oil industries, the fossil fuel industries, who are getting $4 billion of subsidies themselves, we've got to level that playing field to make sure people can compete and allow R&D from our universities.
I believe you had 15 seconds before, so I'm going to give you your 45 seconds.
Well, I appreciate that. Look, there are many, many places in the state where there's innovation occurring, not just in the few handpicked by Congressman Inslee. For example, the second largest sector employer in our state after aerospace is agriculture. A tremendous amount of innovation is occurring there. And we're on the threshold of an agricultural exports boom because of rising standards of living around the world where people have more money and now want better food. I think the best approach is to be colorblind when it comes to the kinds of jobs we're supporting. I don't care if they're green collar, blue collar, white collar, or any other collar. We want all of those jobs in all parts of our state where we have such high unemployment, particularly in the rural areas. That means creating a level playing field where everybody can be successful.
Just because this was your question, you get the last word. Anything you'd like to say in just a few seconds?
The problem is our existing policies are not colorblind. Look, the oil industries get these $1 billion of help right now. The new business person, like the guy here who's developing in Spokane a way to run circle pivots off biofuels, that's the guy that ought to have a way to get his small business started, and that's what I'm standing for.
Mr. McKenna, Louise Bray at Schnitzer Steel Industries in Tacoma wonders about the balance between protecting the environment and growing companies in a trade-dependent state like Washington. Here's my question on that topic. In your jobs plan, you say that state regulation should not exceed federal standards unless there's a clear reason to do so. What are a couple of specific examples of state environmental regulations that exceed federal standards that you believe are too strict? You have 90 seconds.
First of all, on the issue of oil companies and the massive subsidies that they're receiving, those are federal subsidies, a matter of federal tax law. It makes me wonder why the congressman didn't address them when he was still in Congress, when he had majorities in both houses and a Democratic president. On the issue of standards for the environment, my point is that we should not automatically exceed the federal standard, which seems to be the rule of thumb in Olympia today. We need more harmonization of federal, state, and local requirements so that they're less confusing and more certain for everybody who's working hard to comply with those requirements. An example would be shorelines management. We have local regulation of shorelines management. We have state regulations of shorelines. We have federal regulations of shorelines. This is an area where we would do well to look for ways to harmonize the requirements of each level of government so that, frankly, we can achieve more goals such as cleaning up contaminated areas along shorelines. Instead of having a rule of thumb, and almost an automatic rule, that will have a state standard which is higher than the federal standard, let's look at this on a case-by-case basis and keep an eye on the objective of trying to bring requirements into alignment with each other to reduce costs and to accelerate cleanup of brownfields, for example. These areas of regulation have developed almost independently from one another in the sense that you end up with very different standards from one jurisdiction to another. Everybody would be better off. The environment would certainly be better off if more cleanups went forward under a system which is more harmonized.
Mr. Insel, you have 45 seconds to respond.
A great state, and I love this state, is an economic virtue. When we compete to bring people into Microsoft as an engineer, the fact that we've got a great place to live is an economic virtue for business growth. And this is why I'm concerned about my opponent's proposal to really reduce our environmental protections. Now, harmonization is a nice word. It sort of sounds musical. But what it means in the terms that, as I understand, my opponent proposed, is to reduce our protections for clean air, reduce our protections for our shorelines, to go down to the federal standards that maybe are fit for Mississippi and Arkansas, but they're not fit for our state. You bet I've seen some things in Congress that weren't up to Washington standards that I tried to end. We had too many people, most of them on your side of the aisle, who were not willing to protect the environment.
Mr. McKenna, 15 seconds.
The congressman has never met a regulation he doesn't like and that couldn't be stricter. But the fact is regulations have real costs and real consequences. They should be subjected to the same rigorous analysis, the same zero-budget mentality that the spending is and the tax loopholes are.
And a quick follow-up, 15 seconds each. Do you believe existing environmental regulations are robust enough to protect Puget Sound, for example, or the Spokane River? 15 seconds.
I think the regulations may be robust enough, but we're not adequately protecting Puget Sound or the Spokane River at times in terms of addressing the key source of pollution to those waterways, that being non-point source pollution. That means pollution which is not coming out of a pipe from a factory. That's been addressed. We're talking here about runoff from parking lots and streets.
Thank you very much. Mr. Inslee, 15 seconds.
We obviously have more work to do on stormwater. And there are ways to do it that help businesses succeed. There is a proposal to use a stormwater credit training system to help businesses have more efficient compliance with stormwater control. We should embrace those, but not go backwards on environmental protection.
Thank you. This is a question for Mr. Inslee. The Washington State Democratic Party Convention recently passed a resolution against the proposed coal export terminal at Cherry Point near Bellingham. There are also proposals for coal export terminals at Longview and at Grays Harbor. Of course, these projects mean jobs, but there are also a multitude of environmental and public health concerns. What is your position on allowing coal export terminals in Washington?
Well, I believe we should look at these coal proposals through the lens of jobs and job creation. There are some obvious benefits in construction and longshoremen work working on these ports. But there are also some potential downsides for the economies of the towns that these almost two-mile-long trains will go through, including Spokane. So my view is we need to evaluate all of the job prospects, both plus or minus, before we make a decision. Now, that's the right decision economically for our state. It's also the law which we should support. But let me suggest that this is a moment of truth for the state of Washington, and it is a question of whether or not we will embrace a future that can embrace the new systems of energy. You know, we could just give up on the ability to compete with the Chinese in lithium-ion batteries, but I don't think we should. Energy 2 Company on the shores of Lake Union is one of the world's most advanced nanotechnology companies. You can marry up ultracapacitors and perhaps make your electric battery, your car, run further. We need to have policies that will make sure those companies develop here, not in China. We are in a race, and we're in a race with Texas. We're in a race with New Jersey. We're in a race for Germany. And the plans I've proposed are ways to move this state forward the way we always have, which is to be on the cutting edge.
Mr. McKenna, Coal Export Terminals.
Well, this is an important issue to the business community, to organized labor, and to many community leaders in the communities where the bulk commodity terminals are being proposed. It's important to all of them because we're talking about hundreds and hundreds of permanent high-paying jobs. It's important to them because it'll be some of the most significant new economic development in their community in a long time. These projects have to go through a rigorous environmental review process, an EIS process. If they can meet our state's high environmental, health, and safety standards, then why would they be discriminated against as opposed to some other economic development project? And, you know, when we do those analyses, we should do a cumulative impacts analysis, assessing how they would all affect each other if more than one was built.
Okay, thank you. 15 seconds, Mr. Inslee.
I think that's a fair statement. We need to look at the impact on a small business here in Spokane of having a train go by and what that does to their ability to get to their customers. And when we do that, we're going to make good decision, the right decision for the state.
Now it's time for me to step out of the way and time for the candidates to get a chance to ask each other a question. In an earlier coin toss, we determined that Mr. Inslee will ask the first question of his opponent. Sir, you have 30 seconds.
Thank you. Rob, in your 16 years as a politician, you've been given budget authority one time as a King County Council chair. You wrote a budget that was $54 million out of balance. Your Republican colleagues removed you in what they called being deposed, effectively deposed. If you failed in King County, why should the voters trust you in the state of Washington?
Well, that's a fairly selective use of facts, of course, since I was budget chairman for 2 years. In the first year, we successfully passed a budget which for the first time in the county's recent history did not take the maximum property tax increase, which had been the habit of the county for all of those years. The county executive at the time and some of his allies on the council vehemently opposed not taking the maximum property tax increase, but we did it. And thereafter, it became a routine. The second year I was budget chairman, we also did not take the maximum property tax increase. At the same time, I opposed a tax increase that was new, that was proposed by one of my Republican colleagues and the Democrats on the county council. And so, yes, they passed a budget that had the tax increase they wanted that I opposed. That was their right to do. But when you vote on budgets, when you put budgets together, you have to follow a set of principles. And increasing a particular tax, as they wanted to do, that would hurt a certain set of small businesses, in my view, was the wrong thing to do. When the workers from those businesses came in and testified and talked about how these businesses had given them some of their first jobs that allowed them to support their families, that had an impact on me and on my thinking. That's why I didn't support the tax increase. That's why one of my Republican colleagues joined other Democrats to take over the budget process, and that's why they got to pass the budget they wanted. But the fact is, we made tremendous progress in reducing property tax revenue growth and property tax rate increases while I was chairman of the Budget Committee, and made other improvements as well, for example, to fund public transit.
Mr. Inslee, you have 45 seconds.
Well, leadership is hard, and it involves building consensus. And in this instance, given the opportunity to build consensus, my opponent did not succeed with his own party, and you'll have to check out the records to decide whether it was just one disgruntled Republican. I think the record may be a different. But look, we've had too many occasions where people go to anybody and have it my way or a highway. That's simply not the way we can govern in our state. Frankly, we've seen too much of that lately in the other Washington, D.C. We need to have people who will bring people together across the aisle and find solutions. And that's a hard job in the state of Washington. I'll look forward to it.
Okay. Mr. McKenna, 15 seconds.
It's frankly astonishing to hear someone who spent 15 years as a congressman criticize Washington, D.C. as being some other group of people. Secondly, as Attorney General, the state legislature has adopted 45 separate pieces of legislation, which my office and I have written and had introduced, all of them with bipartisan
Thank
support,
you.
All of them signed into law by the governor.
For our broadcast audience, you're listening to a debate between the leading candidates for Washington governor, Democrat Jay Inslee, and Republican Rob McKenna, broadcast on public radio stations across the Northwest and statewide on TVW. Mr. McKenna, you now have 30 seconds to ask your opponent a question.
Thank you very much. Congressman, when you were in Congress, under both Democratic and Republican administrations, you voted for a series of bills that contributed to the housing crisis in America. When a bipartisan group of AGs and I teamed up to reach a settlement with some of America's largest banks to clean up that mess and brought $25 billion of relief, we were cleaning up after the consequences of that measure, of those measures that you voted for. My question is, if you were in Congress today or if you could do it over, would you vote for bills that would make it possible for people with poor credit to obtain mortgages with no money down?
Well, in fact, I voted against the deregulation of Wall Street, which really was the reason we had this financial collapse. The reason, in fact, that we have had such a titanic loss of our values is we had an unrestrained Wall Street. And look, I'm a fellow who's willing to stand up against my own party. When Bill Clinton asked for my support to support the deregulation of Wall Street, to in fact repeal Glass-Steagall, I said no. I voted against it. I'm a person who's willing to stand up against my own party, as I've done, in fact, with some of my union friends have been against some trade agreements. And boy, I wish more people had joined me in making sure that we did not allow unrestrained activity to put us at risk. Now, frankly, Rob, I don't blame those homeowners for their situation. Apparently you do. You believe those people who went in good faith and sought loans so that they could put a roof over people's heads, they're the reason we had this financial collapse. I fundamentally disagree with you. I believe it was the people on Wall Street who played games with our money, made it a house of cards, and brought down our entire financial system. And I'm proud of my vote standing against the reason that I believe we had this financial collapse. So, no, I disagree with you that we should not blame people who were involved. Now, were some people over their heads? Yes. Obviously, there are humans involved in this. But the answer of not the answer to every problem is not to reduce people's access to credit.
Thank you. 45 seconds, Mr. McKenna.
Well, of course, that wasn't the question I asked. I didn't ask about Glass-Steagall or the deregulation of Wall Street. I was asking about the votes that the congressman took to lower lending standards for loans guaranteed by the GSEs, by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. That's what I'm talking about. It happened under both administrations, but it happened while he was in Congress. It happened so because Congress and administrations successively decided they would cheapen lending standards to make it easier for people with poor credit to obtain loans. The problem was it wasn't just those people who were using those no-money-down loans. It wasn't just those people using those pay-option arms. It also invited speculators and others in who thought they could get rich with no money down, who were watching those TV shows on cable TV. Those are the bills I'm referring to here, as the congressman knows, not Glass-Steagall.
15 seconds.
Fundamentally, the Romney-McKenna view in life is that the reason we have problems is because of homeowners, not Wall Street. I have a fundamentally different view. So, no, I do not believe that our economy collapsed because of homeowners. I believed our economy collapsed because of Wall Street irresponsibility.
Now back to my questions, and we're going to pick up where we left off before the candidate-to-candidate question. So the next question goes to Mr. McKenna, and we're going to keep with our theme of the economy and move on to transportation. This is a question from Gary Chandler at the Association of Washington Business in Olympia. He writes, the Connecting Washington Task Force has concluded the amount needed to fully address the needs of our transportation system is approximately $50 billion. That's billion with a B, with at least $20 billion over the next decade. When is the right time to ask voters to support a new round of transportation funding in Washington, and what would that package look like? You have 90 seconds.
The right time will be in the fall of 2013 or the fall of 2014, depending on how long it takes to work with the legislature to put together a package of the best projects with a funding mechanism that can be taken to the voters for their consideration. And voters will have to decide if they want to approve that package or not. We know what the top project priorities are. We've known them for a long time. There are projects like turning SR-509 into a meaningful freight corridor, connecting the ports of Tacoma and Seattle and the airport, of course. Projects like extending 167 so it finally connects from Puyallup to the Tide Flats in Tacoma. Projects like fixing the interchange along JBLM, Joint Base Lewis-McChord, which has become an incredible bottleneck. And other projects as well. An important project in the Spokane area, of course, is the North-South Freeway. We need to continue making progress on that investment. We need to finish paying for SR-520, the replacement of the Evergreen Point Floating Bridge, and finish the Viaduct project as well. We need to pay attention to I-90, which is such a critical corridor for goods and people moving east and west, including agricultural products moving from the east side of the state to our ports on the west side of the state. We need to look for ways to provide more support to local government so they can expand transit service. Transit is a local function, not a state function, but we ought to be offering them ways or working with them to find ways where they can continue to expand transit service to meet the demands of transit riders. And we need to pay close attention to freight mobility while we do all of this.
Thank you. 45 seconds, Mr. Inslee.
Well, I certainly think freight mobility needs to be a higher priority in our transportation planning. But here's what we need if our state is going to move forward. And we know transportation is absolutely fundamental to job creation. And that is trust of Washingtonians in our decision-making process, trust in the state of Washington. And right now, we're lacking that. That's one of the reasons I have committed to a lean management system of bringing lean management principles to every agency of our government, including the Department of Transportation. There is no reason the systems that the Boeing company uses to assure efficiency and to drive out waste should not be used at the Department of Transportation and every other agency for that matter. And as governor, I will make sure that they are.
Your 15-second response.
Well, I have to point out again that the congressman didn't answer the question. When is the right time to put this measure on the ballot? The fact is, the newspapers, the media have reported that he refuses to take a position on when or even whether to take a package to the voters to allow them to decide whether to make the next round of investment in critical transportation projects.
Thank you. Mr. Inslee, 15-second follow-up. When's the right time?
The right time is when we regain and gain the trust of Washingtonians who will, in fact, vote and support a transportation funding package that uses our multiple tools in the toolbox to get this job done. Now, that is not a calendar date. It's a date of what we need to do, which is to build people's confidence and trust in the state government.
Thank you very much. There has been, over the years, talk about private financing of road projects. Fair to say, Democratic Speaker of the House Frank Chop would probably lie down in the middle of the road to block the privatization of highway projects. He says it increases costs. But backers say private financing is a way to jumpstart stalled projects. Mr. Inslee, what is your position on public-private partnerships to fund projects like the North Spokane Corridor or the new Columbia River Crossing? You have 90 seconds.
Well, my view is not based on ideology. I think ideology should not be something that blinds us for creative opportunities to finance any of the projects we need, including public-private partnerships. I'm a person who views we should look at multiple avenues and decides one that work. And I've seen public-private partnerships work. Now, as in many things, the devil is indeed in the details. And we need to make sure that we have tough negotiators negotiating any contract with a private entity. But we have seen that worked. And we're going to have to think of all the tools in our disposal to get that done. Now, one of the reasons I would support, in the right circumstances, these provisions is I do believe private enterprise can produce good products for state government. I am not a Democrat who believes that private enterprise somehow is inherently suspect in our ability to grow jobs. And I realize that if we are going to grow jobs, it has to be a partnership between a more efficient government and private entities that bring capital to the marketplace. Now, when I speak of capital, it's one of the reasons part of my proposals is to propose a tax break for some businesses to get capital in early stage. Now, that's not necessarily transportation. So my view is, yes, I would encounter those and consider those in the right circumstances.
Okay. Mr. McKenna, 45 seconds.
Well, I certainly don't agree with the congressman's proposal, which he announced at the beginning of his campaign, that we should tap our state pension funds to invest in startups, to provide capital to ventures in the early stages. I think that's wrong, and it would violate the fiduciary responsibilities of our pension board and its members. I do agree that public-private partnerships can be a useful tool in funding transportation infrastructures. In fact, the state started moving in that direction back in the late 1980s when Congressman Inslee was a state representative, and unfortunately went off the rails, so to speak, after that, and did not end up actually completing any of those projects on a public-private basis. We need to go back to that model. We need to go back to it because we're going to need to attract private capital in addition to the public dollars we have to raise.
Okay, 15 seconds.
One of the skills of leadership is listening. Some of the proposals I talked about early in my tenure as a candidate caused some concern of people. So I am not proposing and will not propose changes to our investment of our pension system. And frankly, they've made some improvements helping small businesses get access to capital.
Mr. McKenna, a judge in King County recently ruled that Washington's voter-approved two-thirds requirement for tax increases is unconstitutional. Your office is appealing that decision to the state Supreme Court. Meanwhile, initiative activist Tim Eyman is collecting signatures for another supermajority initiative this fall. Setting the legal limbo aside, how will you vote on that measure, and why is a supermajority threshold for taxes good or bad public policy in your mind? You have 90 seconds.
Thank you for making the distinction between the law and public policy, Austin. I appreciate that. I will predict that, as a matter of law, we will go to the state Supreme Court, and we will succeed in overturning the Superior Court's decision, as we did the last time the Democrats in Olympia challenged the two-thirds voting requirement, and the Supreme Court ruled 9-0 against them. I support it as a matter of public policy because the voters have been very clear that they think the people running Olympia since 1985 are too ready to raise taxes too often, that they too often turn to tax increases as the solution, even while people in our state, families and small businesses, are struggling with their own finances. The voters have been quite clear in the last several years that they felt their taxes were too high, so they cut them. They rejected a new income tax, which Congressman Inslee's allies strongly supported. They even took the time to repeal the temporary tax on soda pop and bottled water just to make sure people were listening in Olympia. And, of course, they reenacted the two-thirds voting requirement. They did so because it provides a higher wall, a higher hedge against tax increases that could otherwise become too routine. But it's not an impossibly high wall to surmount. In the most recent session, Republicans and Democrats joined together to repeal a tax loophole, in other words, to increase a tax, by eliminating the tax preference for first mortgage interest for the big banks in our state. That passed with overwhelming support, more than two-thirds in each case.
Thank you. 45 seconds, Mr. Inslee.
Well, it is interesting to me that Rob supported multiple tax increases while he was on the County Council and did not require a two-thirds vote of the people to do that. So things do change, I suppose. Here's what I believe. I believe fundamentally in democracy, and it is a principle of democracy that we have one person, one vote, and that should be a bedrock principle for us. When we impose two-thirds requirements, here is the result. One of our citizens gets one vote. Another of our citizens gets 1.5 votes. I believe all of my fellow citizens are entitled to one vote. And therefore, I oppose this distortion of a democratic principle. Let democracy rule.
15 seconds.
Well, I'm glad the congressman has clarified his position and is now clearly against a rule that 64% of the voters approved when it was most recently on the ballot, and they're likely to reapprove this fall. It's good to have a strong contrast. We clearly have that here.
There is a proposal from the Spokane tribe to open a casino near Airway Heights. What is your position on proposed revenue sharing between the tribes and the state over casino proceeds? And what is your position on casinos, tribal casinos, on non-reservation land?
Well, I think that you have to – there is a federal process, as you know, to determine whether or not there is expansion of essentially sovereignty or use of land for our tribes, and that process needs to be followed. Having said that, I have concerns about expansion of tribal gaming that could result in reduction of value of investments of tribes who have now made significant investments in gaming activity, which has been very successful for communities. And by the way, some of these communities, when I say success, you know, a tribe, about 85 or 80% of the employees in these gaming industries are actually non-tribal representatives. So my view, each of them needs to be reviewed in the merit, on the merits. We need to be concerned about land use impacts. I know there are concerns here about the proposed casino here in Spokane County. There are legitimate concerns, I believe, about how it could affect Fairchild Air Force Base. And I am very, very protective of our ability to continue this economic growth activity of our military system. In fact, it's part of my jobs program. So my view is you have to have a high burden to show the access to expand gaming, but I will follow the law wherever it leads. That's the obligation of the governor.
Mr. McKenna, 45 seconds.
Well, I'm surprised the congressman didn't answer the first part of the question, which is whether or not he supports revenue sharing with the tribes. I personally believe revenue sharing would not be a good idea for our state. It's true that other states that have Indian gaming do have revenue sharing that they negotiated into their compacts. But I think it's problematic for our state for two reasons. Number one, because the compacts don't allow it, and the compacts are binding obligations of the state. Number two, because I don't really think we want the state budget to start becoming reliant on gaming revenue. My mentor, Norm Mailing, strongly opposed that, and I think he had it right when he did. In terms of non-tribal land, no, we shouldn't have casinos on non-tribal land unless it's an initial reservation, as is happening with the Cowlitz. And the problem with the Spokane proposal that we all have to grapple with, as GSI is doing, is the impact on airway, on the Air Force Base, Fairchild Air Force Base.
15-second rebuttal.
Rob, I appreciate you reminding me of the first question. Thank you very much. No, I don't think – thank you. I don't think revenue sharing is fit for the state of Washington. I don't think it's a way to solve our problems.
Gentlemen, we are short on time. With your permission, I'm going to ask that you make closing statements in 1 minute instead of 90 seconds. Mr. Inslee, you will go first.
Awesome. Come on. You told us 90 seconds.
I'm asking for your permission. If I don't have it, then you have 90 seconds on the clock. Go ahead.
Thank you. Go ahead. This is a great state. I know it deeply. I believe its innovative capacity. And I believe that capacity exists all across the state. Whether it's a farmer growing aerospace biofuels in central Washington, or a worker at SGL making advanced carbon fiber in Moses Lake, or a truck driver delivering products for export in Pierce County, or a carpenter growing the new solar cell manufacturing plants in Bellingham, all of the state of Washington has a capability to exercise what I believe is a unique Washington spirit, and that is the spirit of innovation. And I intend to get up every single morning for the next several years, if I am given this great responsibility, helping 180,000 people tap into that innovative spirit, tap into the ability to build a working Washington. And I believe I'm up to that task. I believe I'm up to that task because I know this state, I know the ability to lead an economic engine of discovery, and I hope to win your vote to make sure that we can build a working Washington. We're fully capable of doing that. Thank you.
Mr. McKenna.
Thank you, Mr. Jenkins. Nicely done today. Thank you very much. And thanks to our sponsors for the opportunity. You've heard today me describe a new direction for Washington that will take us to where we need to go for job creation, for reform schools that are innovative, and for a higher education system which is affordable and accessible. You've also heard some clear contrasts and differences between my opponent and myself. I believe that we should create more private sector jobs, not more government jobs. I believe that we should support small businesses by lowering the cost of creating those jobs. I believe that we need a first-class public education system so that all our children have access to great schools, and so that all of us adults are held accountable for any underperforming school. The problem is that in Olympia, all we hear are excuses, that we need more taxes, that we need more regulations. We need to move forward with education funding. We need to move forward with education reform and with state government reform. We need to reform those costs that drive jobs out of our state. Marilyn and I stayed here when we graduated from college. Never would have occurred to us to move elsewhere. We deeply care that your children and theirs be able to stay here as well. We look forward to the rest of this campaign. I ask you for your support in November. Thanks for this opportunity.
And that concludes our debate. Thank you to our sponsors. Thank you to the candidates. I'm Austin Jenkins from the Bing Crosby Theater in Spokane. Have a nice afternoon.